University Forum is a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University, which brings speakers and performers to the campus throughout the semester to lecture on a variety of topics. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the opinions of Nebraska Wesleyan University or of this station. Today, University Forum presents traditional musician Dave Fowler and his accompanists, Steve Hansen and Carolyn Johnson. The title of University Forum is The Evolution of the Plains Fiddle Style. Fowler and Hansen have been involved in traditional music for 20 years. Both have been members of the Nebraska Arts Council touring program for the past decade, and Hansen founded the Bluegrass Crusade. Together, they have presented a lecture for the Nebraska Committee for the Humanities for the past 3 years. Since 1972, Fowler has recorded and visited with traditional musicians in Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, and Wyoming. As a student, he studied violin with Professor Wishnow at the University of Nebraska School of Music. He was the first concertmaster of the Lincoln Youth Symphony conducted by Bernard Nevin. He once won the Bill Monroe Rocky Mountain Bluegrass Fiddle Contest in Denver, but says he is prouder of placing fourth in the Graham, Missouri Community Fiddle Contest. Fowler is an instructor in educational technology at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Join us now for Dave Fowler and Friends and University Forum.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. We're glad to have a chance to play at Wesleyan today. I believe a lot in liberal arts education, and I think Wesleyan's always been known as an excellent example of liberal arts education. I'm also glad to play in the Forum series. This is quite a distinguished series. I think it's a great idea that you do this and bring so many people in. Usually you have speakers here, and I appreciate the special work you went to accommodate musicians. For example, they tuned the piano, provided us with music stand and some other things that make it a lot easier for us. As John said, I'm in the faculty at the University of Nebraska Teachers College. My interest is really in communication, especially instructional communication. So this is somewhat an educational lecture, and it developed from a lecture that I gave originally for the Nebraska Committee for the Humanities. And it's also based on some work I've done with the Nebraska Arts Council. So all these agencies have financed me and helped me develop these ideas. Consequently, I have a lot more ideas than I can get across in 1 hour. This could really be a course, and maybe a good way to think of this lecture is that this would be the introductory lecture to a course on the fiddle and related concepts. The related concepts I'll get into could include, we won't talk much about science, but there's quite a bit known about the physics of the violin, just the history of the instrument, the history of music, and some related ideas in sociology and art that I'll touch on briefly. Mainly, I'll play, and I'll play lots of tunes for you. The idea is that I'm going to talk about the Plains fiddle style, meaning the music that I've heard fiddle players in Nebraska and Iowa and Missouri in particular perform. I got interested when I was in Boston and Cambridge, Massachusetts years ago in traditional music, and later on in San Francisco, and I learned a lot of fiddle tunes from records. The really first live fiddle playing I heard that was really good was in little towns and contests in Missouri. And it struck me that you could identify these people by their style. I'll say just a general word about style. Whatever your discipline is, you deal with style in some way, obviously in literature and art. If you come across a passage, you may say, I know by the style that this is either Faulkner or someone imitating Faulkner. And obviously style is important in art. Even in athletics, you can recognize a basketball team by their coach's style, and people will talk about the run-and-gun style of Oklahoma or so on. And even in science, there are stylistic approaches. The further you get into a discipline, the more you become sensitive to style and the more you develop your own. Fiddle styles, I'll illustrate by playing lots of them. Really, the only way you can understand a style is to see lots of examples and lots of different examples and lots of non-examples. An artist might say that you're showing both the figure and the ground, and a sociologist may say you're showing both a concept and the matrix or the context around that concept. So, although I'm talking about the Nebraska and Iowa fiddle styles, I'll also play lots of examples that are not, just so you can see what they are. If nothing else, at the end of this talk, you'll have heard and be able to see somewhat the difference in the ways that this instrument can be played. John Walker was right in that distinguishing between the fiddle and the violin is important. The instrument is the same, but the music is different, and the relation between the performer and the audience is different, too. Classical music, which we usually think of when we think of the violin, is composed music. It was written down, and it's supposed to be played, interpreted, but played according to the general ideas and the specific notes that the composer had in mind. An audience, the relation between a classical performer and an audience is very formal. The audience is very quiet until the very end of the tune or the concerto or whatever, and then they applaud. In fiddle music, it's a very friendly, almost interactive kind of music. The fiddle player expects that the audience can show signs of enthusiasm while they're listening to the music, and that's true here, too. You can clap along if you want, but please don't feel you have to clap. This is not a summer camp, and I'm not... And some other rules about clapping. If you do clap, you don't have to clap through the whole tune. We'll settle for an occasional raised eyebrow or nod of recognition. We play lots of short examples and don't expect you'd be constantly clapping for every little tune. A few of them that I think you'll feel, especially toward the end, we'll do a couple of rowdy numbers where it's very appropriate for you to shuffle your feet or whatever you do to show enthusiasm. Rhythm is very important in this music, and the particular clapping and rhythm accenting the music will propel the tune better, so we don't mind if you do that. You don't need to say yee-haw. Nobody really ever, in my experience, has said those syllables, E and haw, and listening to old-time music. And I've been to Nashville, and I don't mean Opryland. I mean in the little bars where music is played in Missouri, and I don't know where that expression came from. And I'm sure you feel relieved to know that you don't have to say it, and we'll consider you a real cornball if you do. Now, we're going to start with some Irish fiddle tunes. In general, we'll explain some music, first of all, from the British Isles, because that's where the source of a lot of fiddle music. And I'll start with some tunes that I think that will sound Irish to you. I'll talk just a little bit technically about some other things that make them Irish. The first song is called The Road to Lisdoon Varna, and we'll go directly into a jig called Drowsy Maggie. This also doubles as our sound check, so I play a few notes here. Thank you. Thank you. Now, those tunes have, we call it an Irish character to them. First of all, harmonically, they alternate a lot between major chords and minor chords, so you have sort of an alternation of a cheerful and a sad musical structure. And they have the notes called grace notes, which is a very nice term for the very quick little notes added to a tune. Special kinds of Irish trills. These are all left-hand devices and some techniques of Irish bowing. So you could analyze this in terms of Irish style. Now I'm going to play one more tune. This one is from Scotland. It's a tune called Flowers of Edinburgh, a very nice, sort of very friendly-sounding Scottish piece. One, two. It's easy to make associations between tunes and events, but Carolyn and I were in Edinburgh thinking of that tune and walking around with all the flowers. And so one aspect of style, I suppose, is just that over a through your own experience, you can link tunes and sounds with experiences you have that help define that style for you. Also, there's a little bowing trick in there, and I'm going to make much more use of it in this next tune, which comes from Nova Scotia. It's also a Scottish tune. In fact, Nova Scotia means New Scotland. And this is a very unusual tune, but it will show you a stylistic feature that's more in the right hand than it is in the left. That's a way of snapping the bow across the strings, and it's called the Scots Snap, and I'll demonstrate it. It's a very dramatic effect. It's lots of fun to do. I start doing it, and they have to tell me to quit. And this has a sort of an unusual rhythm to it, too. So this is called the Cape Breton Strathspey. Thank you. Thank you. Very strange, wild type of tune. Now, here's one that's one more British Isle tune. This time it's Irish again. It's been arranged for, you might say, a fiddle tune arranged for violin. That means it has much more of a more ornate piano accompaniment. It's a slow tune, and to me it's also evocative of an Irish scene, but maybe more of a pastoral. Now, that tune is written now, and I'll talk briefly about the subject of literacy in music. It's been said that you can lose a fiddle contest if the judges find out you read music. And having lost several fiddle contests, I can say that it could well be true. Traditional musicians learn to play by ear, and I think one of the reasons that they distrust written music is because it's very hard to capture the nuances of fiddle playing on paper, as it were. And so someone playing a tune, and I'm going to use Turkey in the Straw, which is very familiar to you, but if you were playing it as it were written, and this is from a version called Easy Tunes for the Violin, so it's written out, this is what Turkey in the Straw would, how it would come across. And now we'll show you a little bit of how a folk fiddler might play Turkey in the Straw. That's hard to write down, and the problem is that having written it down, the fiddler might not play it that way again anyway, so it's very difficult. When I was interested in having learned to read music, I looked for fiddle tunes about 20 years ago. You could find very few of them. I said that I would talk a little about technology in the fiddle. There's a lot you can say about what things that have been learned that have helped and in some cases haven't done much to improve violin making and the teaching of violins. But it used to be the only way that you could learn to play the fiddle was to find a fiddler, say if we went back to 1850. Now you can buy videotapes that show you how to play contest style playing. So there's much, the information is much more accessible. Nevertheless, just writing the notes out doesn't help a lot unless you can hear and maybe see a person play and see them play particularly in the real context where they perform. I can say just a bit about the instrument and how it's made. There's some environmental issues here. First of all, the violin comes from about 1600, and the people at that time were experts on painting, you know, if you studied the old masters, especially in Italy. They were experts on wood carving and varnishes, and they were just as expert as we are today. The best minds went into this kind of thing. There's a fallacy that I call the "we're the smartest people there ever was" fallacy. You know, the pyramids had to be built by someone from outer space because we don't know how to do it today, but we're the smartest people there ever were. And it neglects the fact that maybe the best minds in 2000 BC went into moving big blocks of stone, and they knew a lot of things about doing it. And same thing with violins. Stradivarius, you know, they think, well, Stradivarius must have had a secret written on his family Bible, you know, like two parts of varnish and one part of this and that. It was no secret. It was just they were brilliant people who specialized in this kind of work. And the violin is not so mysterious, except it's made out of wood. And since no two pieces of wood are the same, you can't just copy one thing down to the nearest millimeter and expect it's going to sound the same. Every violin has to be made by tapping on the wood and feeling it and looking at it. And it takes a lot of skill to do that. The strings of a violin are nowadays made out of usually a nylon core, and they're wound with a fine metal, aluminum or silver or gold in this case. And the nylon core was originally a gut core, and that means intestine. And it is usually, to get very funky here, it came from the intestine of a sheep. And but the material is called catgut, and it's used in surgery. And if you've ever had any stitches put into you, there's a good chance that you were sewed up with some of the same material that was once used for violin strings. The hair on the bow is made from horsehair. And the bow itself is made from a very special kind of wood that comes really from Brazil. It's called Pernambuco wood. It was once so common that they made barrels out of it. Now you can hardly find it for violin bows. And you know, of course, that anything that has to do with wood, forests, and Brazils is likely to lead into sensitive political issues. And that's true. The base of the bow, which is called the frog, is often decorated with precious materials, for example, tortoiseshell, which is now an endangered material, or ivory, similarly, and wrapped here with leather or with the skin of an exotic animal, for example, exotic lizard. And the hair, the white hair, only certain kinds of horse, is called Siberian white, will do, and these horses are raised with special bags over their tails so the hair doesn't tangle. That's as much as I know about it, and I have to say, I don't know how much more I do want to know about how the horses are raised. But when you see an orchestra playing, you should realize that the old joke about producing sound by scraping a horse's tail over a cat's intestines is almost true. Not only that, that there's a lot of materials there that raise some issues, and probably a percentage of every orchestra concert should go into an environmental fund, just because that's where some of these things come from. So there's your whole earth lecture. And the best violin, just one more thing to say is people do make good violins today. There's a fellow in David City named David Wiebe who makes excellent violins. So it's not a secret that's been lost. It's just a skill that very few people take the time to acquire. Now, the sound is made. The strings vibrate. They vibrate across the bridge, and then the wood across the top, just like the cone of a loudspeaker, vibrates, and that produces the sound. To sustain the sound, you move the bow across the string. If you push down too hard, you get the unpleasant sounds that are characteristic of beginning violin players. Since there are only four strings, you would only get four notes. What a violinist does is systematically shorten the string by putting a finger down, and then each time you shorten the string, it raises the pitch. So that leads into the physics lecture, which we won't go into now. But the mechanics of how the bow makes the string vibrate are very complicated and only partially understood. A violinist learns by experience, by the ear, where to put their fingers, because if you put them in the wrong place, you get that unpleasant effect, which is called playing out of tune. And if you play out of tune and push down too hard with a bow at the same time, you get what's called the Jack Benny effect, which people use to simulate. And Benny, parenthetically, was a pretty good violin player and a great collector and a very generous patron of young musicians. So you see the branching possibilities of this talk. Back to the music. The idea of showing you sort of a primitive approach to the violin is that we'll now talk about plains fiddle style. And the beginning in the plains, the fiddle was one of the most common instruments. It's portable and it's pretty tough. You can put it in a box and jump on a horse and take off with it. And that's something you can't say about a piano or some other larger instruments. It was Gail Potter, who is at the Nebraska State Historical Society, showed me in the Lewis and Clark Journal where they took a fiddle player along with them on their trip, and they took him the same way you might throw a boombox into a canoe today. You know, they wanted the music, so they took a fiddle player along. It's like they check out their equipment. You got the tents, all right. You got the charts, all right. Got the fiddler, all right. And off. Okay, let's go map some territory. And fiddle, then, just to be able to play a simple tune was welcome. If you imagine the silence in human terms on the plain, probably very noisy in terms of insects and birds, but very quiet, then the sound of a fiddle playing a familiar tune would be quite welcome. You know the campfire scenes where the cowboys are sitting around and someone will get out an instrument, a harmonica or a fiddle, and they'll play a little on it. The tune's usually a Red River Valley.
We'll play it real quick.
And then someone will say, it's quiet out there. And then what's the next line?
Too quiet.
Too quiet. All right. Well, here...
Don't leave me on a D-side.
One of the... a popular tune that really was played was Red Wing. And if people, any instrument or anything to make sound, people would join in, even percussion instruments. Carolyn will demonstrate how even a pair of spoons could add to the music. We'll play a little bit of Red Wing here in the key of C. Got the wrong spoons to start with, didn't you? I told you it was in the key of C. All right. I would like to play two very unusual old-time tunes. The first one is from an Appalachian fiddler named Wade Ward. This tune is called Lone Prairie. It's hardly a tune at all. It's really just a kind of wailing away on the instrument. This fascinates me. Like that, Lone Prairie, just wailing away, a very primitive sound, and this is very intriguing to me. When I got started on the fiddle, it was these old-time songs I wanted to learn to play. Here's one other one. I'm not sure just what this one's called, but Steve will play, and it also shows you the unusual, it's kind of an unusual tune, a little more of a ragtime tune.
What is it?
You'll recognize it in the key of G.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's do a little granny and now, we'll very quickly say the plains were civilized and people began to play music indoors. This is sort of parlor fiddle music that we're going to do now. The first tune, it was originally an Irish tune, but we'll play it the way a Nebraska fiddler named Bill Walters played it. Bob Walters, Uncle Bob Walters. It's typical of the real old-time fiddle tunes. It has a strange name. In this tune, in this case, the name is Granny, Will Your Dog Bite? I don't know if there are any words. Okay, well, Steve will back us up on the banjo. Now, here's our parlor fiddle music. Short versions to try to get all these tunes in. Here's one called Miller's Reel, and this one has a classical kind of device, the cross-string bowing in it. These are fine old tunes, fine old plains-style fiddle tunes. Now, while Steve has a banjo here, I'm going to show you something that he does. It's a very intricate playing. Four years ago, I was talking about jazz, and I talked about some people in Czechoslovakia who'd been arrested for possession of jazz records. Now, they have a very new and gifted leadership. This is a Czech tune. It's the clarinet polka, which we'll play on the fiddle, and that's not that unusual these days. In fiddle contests, you'll hear it. It's very unusual that someone can play it on the banjo, on the plains, or anywhere else. So here's our version for all you folks from Wilbur or wherever. Thank you. All right, Steve Hansen, the national banjo champion a few years ago. Let's have Steve do a couple, let's do a bluegrass song. First of all, an old-time song called Boil the Cabbage Down. And
caught me with my picks off.
Oh, okay. This is one of the real old-time songs, and we'll follow that up with a Scruggs-style tune.
Now
let me see.
Which one do you want to do first?
Well, now you've got your picks on, we'll do Boil a Cabbage Down. It's a very simple tune, almost too simple. It goes like this. You can't get a whole lot more simple than that. But by adding something called the Nashville Shuffle, a bowing style, and the double shuffle and the banjo, we'll turn this into a real old-time bluegrass song.
True love say, yonder comes my bow. Boil them cabbage down, boys, turn the whole cakes round. The only song that I could sing is Boil That Cabbage Teacher, tell you the reason why. Blows her nose in the old cornbread and calls it pumpkin pie. Boil them cabbage down, boys, turn the whole cakes round. The only song that I could sing is Boil That Cabbage Down.
Thank you. We have time. I think I know we'll do one more song. We have a lot of other things we could do. While we're revved up here, we'll do an old-time song, and this one is called Soldier's Joy. It's an old-time song about sex and alcohol. I can see you're interested right away, but you... You won't be able to really figure that out from the words. Drugs, too, I think it has some reference to morphine, but only as a battlefield anesthetic.
Pull that mic back.
I forgot about Steve needing to sing. That's pretty hard to sing. Doubled over and play the banjo. What a feat. What a versatile guy.
Comes from the old days, Dave. Only having one mic.
We wanted to talk about technology. Originally, you know, a radio station or a loudspeaker system had one microphone. Everyone just danced in and out of it. Bluegrass choreography is sort of a lost art. Now you just double over.
Oh, I don't feel so good.
Soldier's Joy.
Get a drink now, don't you wanna go? Gonna get a drink now, don't you wanna go? Oh, that soldier's joy. Thank you. 25 cents for the beer, 15 cents for the morphine, gonna get me out of here.
Thank you very much. John said we could do one more, and then I believe there's a talk back period. Is that right? So we'll have some time right here for some questions and answers or further examples if you're interested. We'll do let's do the Cajun waltz and the Cajun stomp. We'll kind of combine these just to show you two recent influences, not only to Midwest cooking, but to Midwest fiddle playing. So we're going to blacken this waltz and spice up the stomp. Here we go. But by way of contrast, we might say there are a lot of very nice slow fiddle waltzes, but this is how the Cajuns would play a waltz. They do it energetically, like everything they do. For our last tune, the Cajun Stomp. One, two, one, two. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Today's guest on University Forum has been traditional musician Dave Fowler, with his accompanists Steve Hansen and Carolyn Johnson. The presentation was entitled The Evolution of the Plains Fiddle Style. This has been University Forum, a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University. Nebraska Wesleyan is a private undergraduate liberal arts university located in Lincoln, Nebraska. Approximately 1,300 full-time students are enrolled in more than 40 programs at the university.